Genesis chapter 24. Turn there and we'll continue on. Remember last week we've talked about Abraham sending his servant to find a wife for Isaac, and his travels and what took place there. Once he found her and talked to the family and explained the circumstances, remember her father and her brother both say, yep, obviously this is of the Lord, because with you explaining the circumstances, we see the Lord's leading there. And then he says, and they say, yep, there she is, take her, is basically what they say. Oh, by the way, before I forget, jump back a page. Mine's a page. Remember when I said, when verse 21 of chapter 24 says, and the man wondered, and the man wondering at her held his peace. Pastor said wondering, when you think of wondering, sometimes you think of, well, he's wondering about the circumstances or how they. So I did look it up. A lot of times I'll look up these words that I come across, but I missed that one. And you know what? Wondering here means stunned or astonished. It also means gaze. Have you ever been astonished by something happening and you're kind of, you know, that gaze, that idea? Or it also means whirling to giddiness. How's that? So, yes, he wasn't wondering about the circumstances. He was so surprised. Yes. Yeah. Stunned, shocked that, yeah, that things had worked this fast. So anyhow, I wanted to let you know I did bring that up. You know, it's when you're studying or even reading through Scripture and you come across something that doesn't make sense, you know what? I'll do one of Pastor's public service announcements. Get yourself a concordance. I knew I had that word in my head. I couldn't get it out. And look through there. Look up some of these words and what they mean. You know what? You can actually, and I use this more than anything else, you can actually get the Strong's Concordance app on your phone. I get tired of flipping through pages and pages and pages, you know, and then, oh, I missed it by 4 pages, and then I got to go back, and then I got to, but this is easy, you know, it comes right up, you can go scroll right to the word, and but it's Strong's Concordance as well. So get yourself in concordance some way, somehow or another, and look up these words so that you know what the meanings are. But anyhow, a little public service announcement there. Okay, so verse 54, after everything was settled and they did eat and drink, he and the men that were with him, remember the servant said, nope, we're going to take care of business first. And they tarried all night and they rose up in the morning and he said, send me away unto my master. And her brother and her mother said, let the damsel abide with us a few days, at least 10, after that she shall go. And he said unto them, hinder me not, seeing the Lord hath prospered my way and sent me away, that I may go to my master. Remember what I asked you last week? What was my question? What were you supposed to figure out?
I don't know, ask us the question.
Okay. What do you think would be wrong with waiting? Why was the servant insistent upon leaving right away? Can you think of anything?
Impatience.
Okay, well, it might have been impatience on his part. Anything else?
Temptation to stay.
Okay, temptation to stay. Reading through commentaries, one suggested a couple of things. As you delay, well, from the servant's point of view, he was doing God's will. And if you think about it, the delay over a period of days may cause you to doubt whether or not this was actually what God wanted you to do, right? Ever look through Scripture and come across something and say, yep, that's something I need to you know, God speaks to you and you should incorporate this, but you put it off, and then you put it off again, and then sooner or later you begin to wonder, was that even what it said? The servant had seen God working in these circumstances and didn't want to delay. I have a task to do. God has directed me this way, and I am going to get with my task. I'm going to do it. So sometimes delaying is counterproductive for a couple different reasons. Go ahead.
I don't know how long this trip was either.
Right.
Maybe he wanted to get back before Abraham died.
Well, that could be. That could be. But at any rate, he wanted to get this task completed. He had been put on this task. excuse me. And delaying may cause a overall change of heart, right? That's okay. I'll show you afterwards. That's okay. So now where was I at? Not only would the delay maybe cause you to wonder if this was really God's leading or if this is really something I should do, or maybe even a change of heart. You know, yes, I see God's leading me through this direction, and yes, you can take Rebecca, and then the next day, after they've had a chance to think about it, they say, oh, wait a minute. You can take her, but not right now. And that delay can cause maybe they would change their mind altogether after they have a chance to consider it and ponder it and think about all the other circumstances that might be involved. Instead of following what God had obviously directed, they might have had a change of heart. And the last thing is she really going to be any more ready to let her daughter go or her sister go 10 days from now any more than they are right now? Probably not. So anyhow, so we see the servant saying, you know, don't hinder me, don't keep me here, let me go, let me get this task done. So they say, verse 57, and they said, we will call the damsel and inquire at her mouth. And they called Rebecca and said unto her, wilt thou go with this man? And she said, I will go. Obviously, she knew what was going on. It's not like she was...
She wasn't kept having any second thoughts.
Right. Obviously, it's not like she was kept in the dark as to the circumstances and everything that was going on here. You don't see any delay in her mind. And we'll get... talk about this a little bit more anyhow. But Rebecca says, I will go. And verse 59, and they sent her away, Rebecca, their sister and her nurse and Abraham's servants and his men. And they blessed Rebecca and said unto her, thou art our sister. Be thou the mother of thousands of millions. My Bible says thousands of millions. And let thy seed possess the gate of those which hate them. Interesting statement here. May your seed be that of thousands of millions or ten thousands. Interesting that that would be what they would tell her. If your daughter was leaving to go marry somebody else and they were moving away, is that what you'd tell her? It's just interesting. Again, the importance of children in this circumstance, in this society, in this time, was extremely important. So that would be a blessing that they would pronounce on her. And the other thing is, and let thy seed possess the gate of those which hate them. There's another interesting statement, isn't it? Possess the gate of those who hate them. What happened at the gate? What usually happened at the gate of the city? The business. Those who were in charge did their business at the gate of the city. If you possess the gate, then you what?
You control it.
you control it. So, and may your seed control those who hate them. May you have the power over those who hate you or don't like you, whatever it may be. So,
I thought this was literally saying control the cities of those who hate them, which refers to the conquest of Canaan. Is that
right? I don't know that that specifically refers to that. It may, in a roundabout way, refer to that, but I don't know that you can necessarily link this directly to that.
Don't we see all through, like I think about even Lot, he sat at the gate.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the leaders
yeah. Of
Sodom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the business was conducted. Or even in the latest Bible study, Mordecai
mm-hmm. Was
at the gate.
Right. So. Right. Okay, so we'll continue. And Rebekah rose and her damsels, and they rode upon the camels and followed the man. And the servant took Rebekah and went his way. So Rebekah left with who? Not only the servant, but, okay, her maids, her damsels, her helpers, whatever you want to apply there. So she left with a group of individuals from home. Now they all go with you, your servants or those who help you, whatever it might be. And so they work on their way back. Verse 62, we start to hear about Isaac and something that goes on, but you'll notice there's kind of a gap here. We see nothing about the journey on the way back, much like we saw really nothing about the journey on the way there. It's not like it was just a day's journey. It was quite a length of time to get from one place to the other. But again, that's left out of the narrative here. Isaac's, verse 62, and Isaac came from the way of the well of Lahai Roi, for he dwelt in the south country. Interesting here. Does that sound familiar? I guess not. Lahai Roi is where we'll see about it here at the well of Lahai Roi. That was the same place that God spoke to Hagar.
Right.
Was it the same?
Chapter 16, verse 17.
Yep, was at that same place. So we see here that Isaac had moved away and was setting up or had lived there at this other location away from Abraham. For he dwelt in the south country. So he was dwelling down there at this place. And Isaac went out to... it says, and Isaac came from the way of the well of Lahai Roi. So for some reason, we're not told why, sounds like Isaac was coming from wherever he was now living back to where Abraham was, because obviously Abraham's servant is going to bring Rebekah back to Abraham, right? So Isaac, for some reason, is going to visit his dad, and on the way, verse 23, and Isaac went out to meditate in the field at the evening. We'll stop there for a minute. What does this tell us about Isaac?
He was a godly man.
Okay.
He had habits of maintaining his relationship with the Lord.
Okay. So we don't hear a lot about Isaac up to this point or so far. We will later on as we go through the book of Genesis. But we see that Isaac was a godly individual. He went out to meditate, to pray. In the evening, while he was out there, what do you think he was praying about? I mean, not that we know all the circumstances that went on in his life, but quite possibly he could be praying about, you know, I know, God, that my father sent, you know, whatever the servant's name was, back to our home country to get me a wife. I wish you'd work these circumstances out, okay? Yeah, and, you know, whatever else it might be. Verse 63, and he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, the camels were coming. Interesting. That's kind of what God did for the servant when he was praying about the wife, right? He was knelt down, prayed before he was even barely finished. God had answered. And so we see the same thing happening here. And Rebecca lifted up her eyes. And, so he beholds the camels were coming. So we know that 10 camels Abraham sent. We don't know how many camels or whatever Rebecca and her entourage was riding on the way back. But more than likely, Isaac recognized who it was. After all, he knows these individuals, he knows these people. So it's quite possible that he understood who this was that was coming when he lifted up his eyes. And Rebecca lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she lighted. It's funny, this word lighted actually means to fall. I doubt she really fell off her camel, but...
New King James said dismounted.
Dismounted, yeah. So she gets off her camel, for she had said unto the servant, so they had been talking about this. She had said unto the servant, so she said unto the servant, who is this? What man is this that walketh in the field to meet us? And the servant had said, it is my master. Therefore she took a veil and covered herself. Don't let him see you before the wedding. She covered herself, and the servant told Isaac all things that he had done. So again, do you think Isaac might have wondered what all took place and exactly how this worked out? I mean, after all, they were headed somewhere to get a wife for him that was going to be his wife. You don't think you'd want to, you know what the circumstances were? I do. I think I'd be kind of interested to know.
How'd you pick this one?
Yeah. Why this one? What happened? You know, the circumstances. So, and the servant told Isaac all things that he had done. Again, it's interesting that the servant explains the whole set of circumstances, like we had been told before, like when he told Laban and Bethuel. All the circumstances, and again, the importance of understanding how God had worked in all of these things, I'm sure that assured Isaac that God had been the one that selected this wife for him and gave him assurance, understanding that God works through circumstances. Isaac brought her into his mother's, Sarah's tent, and took Rebekah, and she became his wife. And he loved her, and Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Again, something I thought interesting. Why would he be in his mother's tent? Anybody? Pardon me?
Maybe she was ill.
Well, we know that Sarah was dead or had passed away at this point. Okay, so stop and think. Who's going to have the nicest tent around? Abraham, right? Right? Come on. And Sarah's tent is going to be what?
Second
nicest tent. Right. There you go. Makes sense, right? So obviously, was it being occupied? No. Sarah had passed away at this point, right? So interesting that they mentioned that here, but if you stop and think about it, it makes sense. The tent's not being used. It's pretty much the nicest tent in the area other than probably Abraham's. So.
Probably had girly colors.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, so God has provided a wife for Isaac. And then it kind of shifts. We hit chapter 25, back to Abraham. Then Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah. Okay, hold on a minute. Abraham is at least how old at this point? Do you know?
137.
Isaac was 40 when he married Rebekah.
Right.
We'll see that in the next chapter. So if Abraham was 100 when he had Isaac, though, so he was at least 140. At this point, we don't know what the time frame is exactly here. We'll see as we get a little farther on that Abraham lived to 175. So somewhere between 140 and 175, Abraham gets married again. And the interesting part is when Sarah was pregnant, they figured they were both too old to have kids. Yet God had not only promised a child, but had to miraculously make it possible for them to have children. So he had physically rejuvenated, however you want to say that, both of them to allow them to have children. Right? Sarah was way past the age of bearing children, so there had to have been some physical alteration that God had made in order for her to have children. Right?
Wasn't too hard for the Lord.
Right. He made them after all to begin with, so it's not too hard to change them and rejuvenate them in that way. So we see that he took a wife at least 140.
John?
Yes. I did. Some seem to think that they use the word concubine, and we'll get to that. Both her and Hagar, of course, Hagar, he never technically married. At least we don't see that in Scripture. But some said that they refer to him as concubines because she was not his primary wife. That's why they differentiate between the two. But I thought the same thing. Maybe she wasn't actually his wife, but it does say here that he took her to wife, so it would seem like another marriage, as opposed to just, yes, he had concubines, and this was one of them. Don't necessarily think we could connect the fact that most of these children wind up, and we're jumping ahead again, wind up connected to the Arabic nation, that you can necessarily connect the fact that that's considered worldly or the evil half of the situation, and therefore, because he took a wife that was...
We can with Hagar.
Yes, that would... Right.
With Hagar.
Right.
I've never heard any connection with Keturah's children.
Right. Yeah. Well, it doesn't mean that their children followed God's leading or believed in here, but yes, Midian here is the Midianites. But anyhow, we'll get to that. So it says, and she bare him Zimran and Jokshan, you like these names, Medan and Midian, and Ishbak and Shua. So how many sons did he have with Keturah? Did you count them? Six, right? So six sons. So even if he was, 140 right after Isaac got married, or in that time frame, six children are not, well, might happen in 6 years, but it might be as much as, 10 years span that he had these six children. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean that all he had was boys either, because Scripture only records the sons. So it's quite possible that he had daughters as well. And again, from 140 on. And Jokshan begat Sheba and Dedan. And the sons of Dedan were Ashurim and Latershim and Lumim. And the sons of Midian, Ephah and Epher and Hanok and Abida and Elda. You know how long I got to practice these names just so I don't look? Okay. All these were the children of Keturah. So we see this list of individuals, sons born to Abraham from his second wife Keturah. Interesting here, verse 5, and Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac. Abraham understood that Isaac was the seed from which God was going to create a nation. So he gave everything he had to Isaac. I know that's what he said, gave all that he had, but it says, and unto the sons of the concubines, and this is where it mentioned concubines, so you would think that Keturah was a concubine, but either way, which Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts and sent them away from his son while he was yet lived eastward into the east country. So Abraham takes all these children at some point before he dies and sends them away from that area. Kind of interesting. It says that he gave them gifts, so more than likely this is supplies enough to relocate in a new location, whatever that might consist of, food, animals, servants, whatever it may be. It sounds like he gave them whatever was necessary for them to relocate, but he sent them away from Isaac, the chosen one. Kind of interesting that this took place. And again, you don't have six children all at the same time, so it's not like, you know what I'm saying? There had to have been a period of time where his wife was having children, he was having children, they were growing up in his household, yet at some point he determines that it's time to send them away. For whatever reason. We're not told why. Did he think they were going to be a bad influence on Isaac? Did he not want them coming to Isaac and saying, we deserve part of your inheritance as well? I don't know. It doesn't say. But Abraham sends them away. Verse 7, and these are the days of the years of Abraham's life, which he lived 103 years. 175 years. And Abraham gave up the ghost and died at a good old age. Yeah, he's definitely a good old age now, huh? He thought he was old before. An old man, full of years, and was gathered under his people. And his sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, which was before Mamre. What do you see here that's interesting?
Isaac and Ishmael still had a relationship.
Right.
That when dad died, Ishmael even wanted to be there to bury his father.
Yeah, yeah. Now, We don't know what the circumstances were. We don't know what his feelings were. But we knew that he grew up to about the age of 14, 15, somewhere around in there.
Teenager.
Right. Before he was sent away. So we don't know what that relationship was, but we know that he was there when he passed. Yeah. Right. Well, God had told him that he was going to give, was going to give them a son coming up. So it's interesting here that Ishmael and Isaac were the two that, if you want to say, officiated at his burial. They were both there. So we see they were at least able to get along to the point that they could bury their father. Now, again, I can't necessarily read more into it than that. But they were there for that burial, which is interesting.
I think that's the last time we ever see a record of them together.
Yeah, yep, it is. so they buried him in the cave of Machpelah. Remember what that is? Who's there already?
Sarah's
there, right?
Paid for that. He said, I want this one.
Right, yep. So that was the one that he bought in the field of Ephron, from the son of Zohar the Hittite, which is before Mamre. Remember, we talked about that a chapter or so ago. the field which Abraham purchased of the sons of Heth, there was Abraham buried and Sarah his wife. We'll see again farther on down the road that there's more that get buried here in this same cave. By the way, remember, how much land does Abraham own in the promised land at this point? Just here. This is the only thing that technically he owns. They're still fairly nomadic. They may plop down in an area for a while, but they don't own that land. But anyhow, excuse me. And it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt by the well of Lahairoi. So obviously he was dwelling down there to the south of where Abraham was at and went back and lived there. We'll do a little bit. Now these are the generations of Ishmael. So in the record here we have, now that Ishmael's name is brought up again, we have the sons of Ishmael. Abraham's son, who Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bare unto Abraham. And these are the names of the sons of Ishmael by their names, according to their generations. The firstborn of Ishmael, Nebajoth, and Kedar, and Adbeel, and Mibsham, and Mishma, and Duma, and Massa, and Hadar, and Tema, and Jetur, and Naphish, and Kedema. These are the sons.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, if anybody's looking, here's a whole list of names you can pick from for your kids. There we go. We'll talk about more about Ishmael's sons and continue on with this next week. Lord bless you this morning, and you're dismissed.